Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Culbranson.
Welcome back. Silver and Black Today, powered by our good friends, Sam and Ash, the injury attorneys, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. Scott Culbranson back with you here on this beautiful Friday in the Mojave Desert in Las Vegas, Nevada, the capital of Raider Nation, the home of your Las Vegas Raiders. Thanks for being with us today. A lot to get to today. A lot of Super Bowl talk today. And I want to spend a lot of time talking about what everybody watched last night, right? You watching rerun? No. You were watching the 30 for 30 Al Davis versus the NFL. I saw a lot of reaction on Twitter last night, but I'd like to hear you guys call in 702-365-9200. What did you think of it? What did you think of everything from the story to how it was told to the deep fake, you know, where they use the license to bring in actors, stand-in actors, and then change out their faces thanks to technology with Al Davis and Pete Rozelle. And I really liked it. I know a lot of you didn't, but I liked it. I thought it was a very good filmmaking device to really bring to life the conversations and a lot of what was said and a lot of what the characters in the story had to say and felt. So I liked it a lot. I love the interjection of Las Vegas into the story, because if you think about it, the end result and what Al Davis wanted. Now, back then, he wasn't thinking Las Vegas. He was thinking Los Angeles and then back to Oakland and so on. But the whole point of it was, here's a man who had the moxie to stand up to his own league and his fellow owners because he just wanted to compete. He just wanted to win. Okay, and so to do that, he had to sue the NFL, he had to go his own way, and in many ways become a pariah, at least with the owners, not with fans or anything like that. And, you know, we talked to Ken Rogers, the director, yesterday. If you missed that interview, you can check it out on our podcast feed, wherever you get your podcast. I don't care where you get your podcast. We're there, radio.com, Spotify, Apple, Google, wherever. Listen to the interview with Ken Rogers we did yesterday. I thought it was very good. I'm proud of it. And he really talks about that whole story and about Al Davis. Because, again, I think for a lot of younger fans and a lot of non-Raiders fans, to be able to understand what Al Davis was doing and to put it in the right context was so vital, right? So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It wasn't going to be everything everyone wanted, okay? There was just not, that was not going to happen. You're not going to please everybody, especially with someone with the history, the personality, the gravitas, the success, the maverick streak that Al Davis had. There's no way you're going to encapsulate that into one documentary, which is why yesterday I thought and I said on this show that I hope that the exploration of the Pete Rozelle and Al Davis feud and fight back and forth with the league, I hoped that would make other filmmakers and authors look more into the history of Al Davis. Now, we've had Al Davis books and we've had authors on this show for 3 years to talk about Al Davis, talk about the Raiders organization. But I think it deserves revisiting because so much of what Al envisioned for his team became the status quo, the normal thing to do for all NFL owners. So every NFL owner, they owe a debt of gratitude to Al Davis. There's no question. And so does the NFL. And I will say, despite the differences, Pete Rozelle deserves some of his credit too, even though he tried to screw the Raiders several times. We've talked a lot about that on this show. But either way, both men were passionate. They both had respect for one another, even though there was animosity there at times during the argument. And that was another part of it. I thought that one of the key takeaways from this film really was Mark Davis kind of burying the hatchet and moving forward. And he says that towards the end of the film, of course, when he's interviewed by Brent Musburger. It's kind of moving forward with that. That's not in any way disregarding Al's legacy, his point of view, or how he did things. For what he did at the time was the right thing for him and the Raiders. There's no question. And as it turned out, the right thing for the NFL and for the other owners, even though they fought him on it. They fought him on it, and what he was doing was actually helping them more than they ever knew. Just ask Jerry Jones. Just ask Robert Kraft. They'll tell you that's why they helped Mark Davis move the team to Las Vegas, because they understood it, and they helped right the wrong that started with Pete Rozelle and the NFL back in the 80s. Heck, the 70s. I really enjoyed it. I want to hear your opinion. 702-365-9200 is the number. We'll get some callers on here in a second. Joining me, co-hosting with me today a little bit, is my man, my producer, my engineer extraordinaire, and a man of all seasons. That is, of course, Christopher Chapman. Chris, what's going on today, buddy?
Hi, not much. It was pretty impassioned that you just gave about Al Davis. It's pretty awesome. I haven't had a chance to watch it, but I will this weekend. Obviously, it's one of those things where living in Las Vegas, it now becomes part of our sporting history as a city, what Al Davis did. And obviously, as a guy who grew up rooting for an AFL team, or an original AFL team, I should say, there's a lot of thanks that I feel like teams like the Jets, the Bills, the Patriots, they owe to Al Davis and the Raiders because they were revolutionary in what they were doing. And without Al Davis, there probably isn't the NFL as we know it today. So it's definitely something that if you're a sports fan, you live in this city, you're just a sports fan in general. Maybe you don't live in this city. It's one of those things where you almost have to watch because the NFL was completely revolutionized by the work of Al Davis and the people who were with him. And I saw you tweet out last night about Bob Bloom.
Yeah. Local
sports legend Bob Bloom, right? Like he had his hands in everything in this city. Unfortunately, we lost Bloomer a couple of years ago, but anybody who's anybody in this business, in this town, we also owe a big thanks of gratitude to Bob Bloom because he was also a guy who revolutionized what we did in this city.
Yeah, I tweeted out an old film of him and Al Davis from 1964 where he introduces Al to talk about the Raiders 64 season. And Bob, you know, the press box out at the new Summerlin Baseball Stadium, the ballpark out there, is named after Bob, as is the press room at UNLV. So, you know, that's for those of you who don't know Bob, Bob was good friends, did broadcasting for the Raiders in the early days, was close, very close personal friends with Al Davis and used to talk about Al Davis and tell us stories back when I was a young man and worked at UNLV. Bob was my roommate on the road when we used to travel with women's basketball. And I love a lot of them I can't tell on the air because Bob was a perfect gentleman. But in the company of men, he liked to talk like he was in the company of men. So there's a lot of curse words and stuff like that, so I can't share any of those. But I learned a lot from Bob early in my career, and that was something that was great to see last night come out. But we'll go on the phones now. We have Steel Reserve, who is on the phone. Steel, what did you think of the documentary last night?
Hey, man. I learned a lot, man. I knew a lot because I do. Of my Raiders, man. I say all the time.
You're breaking up on us, man. I'll tell you what.
You hear me now?
Hang up and call back. We'll put you right back on, okay? All right, we're going to go to Fabian. Fabian's on the line here on Silver and Black today. Fabian, what'd you think of the film last night?
You know, to be honest, I was kind of a little disappointed. Maybe it was the big buildup. I was waiting for something to learn something new because that's an era that I grew up in. And so I, you know, there wasn't anything new. I forgot about the guy in the jury who couldn't care less and was maybe a plant. But you know, the deep fake stuff, like a lot of people talked about, and I watched all the after stuff. Yeah, you know, it's either here or there. But you know, just the idea of just seeing that guy walking in the white outfit in a darkened Allegiant Stadium kind of brought chills to me. But
yes.
The one that got me, though, was a shot of Willie Brown running the touchdown back. I almost started crying.
Yeah, but, you know, and Fabian, you bring up good points. I understand the deep fake stuff and people do it. I thought they did a good job with it. I mean, you're not going to get somebody who's going to capture Al Davis like everyone would want them to because he's such a unique character, right? So you're never going to nail it 100%, but I thought they did a good job. And you're right. the scenes, for those of you who haven't seen it, I don't mean to spoil it, but I know most fans have seen it already. I thought those, and I said it yesterday when I was talking to Ken Rogers, the director, I said, I didn't grow up a Raiders fan, but this gave me goosebumps because you almost think about it. In my head, I said to myself, yeah, the ghost of Al Davis has got to be walking around Allegiant Stadium and saying to himself, damn it, we finally got it done, right? And you got to thank Mark Davis for that, as well as others in that organization who made it happen. But I understand that, yeah, for you who grew up with it, like I grew up and I remember the trial because I grew up in San Diego. I grew up a Charger fan. And I remember the Gene Klein thing where he had the heart attack after being in court, right? And that's part of the reason Charger fans also dislike the Raiders so much besides the on-the-field stuff. And I just forgot about all the drama and all, I mean, and I talked about it with Ken yesterday. Can you imagine the age of social media? This thing would be 24/7, just amazingly toxic all the time. So from that perspective, I thought it was really, really good, especially for fans that are probably under 40, because you a lot of that if you didn't live through it or if you were too young to remember it, then you got a really good taste for just how intricate it was and how crazy it was.
Yeah, no, I think Pritch said it best this morning. What would have been nice is after Pete Rozelle, as they're walking by the Al Davis Memorial Torch, and he goes, hey, did you get your 2/3 vote? It would have been great for them to have put up a thing saying to vote 31 yeah. to 32 teams voted for the move. That would have nailed it.
That's a great one. That's a great recommendation. Fabian, thanks for your call, man. We appreciate it. All right, we got Steel Reserve back. He's on a better sell. What's up, man? Okay, go. Steel Reserve, you there? We lose you again? Oh, man, Steel Reserve. Change.
No, we got him back. We got him back.
Oh, we got him back. Oh, there he is. Okay, go ahead, man.
What's up, man? Hey, like I said, man, I do a lot of my homework on my Raiders, but there's a lot of things I learned. It was a great documentary. The last caller said, you know what, whatever, it's not for everybody, and I get that, but it was great. Hearing the Autumn Wind play and the orchestra style and the piano, it just brought chills, man. And to see how Al came up, he's over there selling programs or whatever he was selling, scout reports on other teams, trying to sell them, and they just, and what's his name? Pete Rozelle just looked at him like, get out of here, punk, you're bothering me. And for him to work his way up, because his fan base, I don't care what anybody says, the majority of his fan base is a blue-collar, hardworking, nose-to-the-ground fan base. And to see Al, like one of us, start from the ground and work up and become an owner of probably the most iconic franchise in NFL, I don't care what anybody says, it is. Like, you had a caller call the other day on a morning show, say, how big is this Raider Nation? Let me tell you something. It's a lot bigger than that kingdom. That Muppet Kingdom is nothing compared to the Raiders. You know what? You can go to another country, and people will recognize that iconic image. We are the Raiders brand is a culture thing. It's yes. worldwide. It's not, oh, I'm going to throw a Chiefs hat on. And no, people are going to see the Chiefs hat in another country and be like, what is that, an arrow? It's like, come on, man. But I learned a lot, and it brings me great pride to see that. And like I said this morning, man, it disgusts me, this defense, especially this defense this year. And I'm not just saying them, but specifically this defense, with all the high draft picks, we got like, what, I want to say 6 or 7 plus first rounders. Not all ours, but all first rounders. And to put out what they put out there, we were so high on the pecking order back in the day. And for them to put that product out there, it just disgusts me and infuriates me. And we need to be better than that. And I really hope, and I know you guys have said it time and time again, they need to sit those defensive players down to watch that. And if they don't get amped on that, I definitely don't want to see those players wearing the throwback jerseys in training camp like they did last year, because that right there is blasphemous for what they put out on that field this year.
Steel Reserve, thanks for the call, man. And I agree with you. The story of Al Davis is such an American story, right? Somebody who comes up and works his way from the lowest positions. And I understand there's some of you out there who think that, the deck can be stacked against you depending on economics, depending on race, depending on education, whatever it may be. But I will tell you that to me, as I've covered the Raiders for 3 years and before I started really, really for the first time, delved deep into the history of Al Davis and the franchise, and that is that it is a truly American story and a great one. And you're right. There is a responsibility for everyone who wears that jersey, who puts that shield on. I don't care if it's on a polo shirt and they're working in the front office, to understand what made it so great and understand what Al Davis was doing. It was not about just winning, even though he said just win, baby. It's about building the best, as he always said, the best organization in sports, not in football, not in football, in all of professional sports. So it's a good one. All right, we're going out to our friend Gangster Raider. Gangster Raider, what's going on, man? What'd you think of the film?
Man, I loved it. You know what I mean? Because I'm down here in L.A., and I got to talk to these former Raider fans who all fans of different teams now, because they got mad when the Raiders left and went back to Oakland. You know what I mean? I keep telling them, they gave them a stadium like they promised, so if they had just renovated the Coliseum like they promised, we would, hey, nah, he was just greedy. And you know what I'm saying? It told the real story, like I've been telling them for years. So I feel vindicated, as well as Al Davis feels vindicated. You know what I'm saying? And what I really loved about it was how they showed, you know, how the animosity between Al Davis and the commissioner, I won't even say his name, the commissioner affected the Raiders on the field. But I don't think they went into it enough to how, you know, it kept on going even to this day. While we get bad calls, we get the worst travel schedule throughout the league. You know, we had the worst stadium in the league forever because they wouldn't help us. You know, I think they took the high road and didn't show how petty the NFL actually was and still is to us to this day. And I also like how it made Al Davis look like he took the high road, because like they said, they had that prank ready for Pete Rozelle. If Mr. Davis would have gave the word, if he didn't say thank you to the commissioner, they'd have went along with the prank or whatever. And in hindsight, I kind of wish he would have, you know what I mean, so I could see what they would have did to his punk butt, you know what I'm saying, especially after all these years of abuse we've taken from the refs, you know, from the league's directive and everything and all that. But what I really liked about it, my favorite part, was how it showed the old players, how they played, how important it was to play good and represent the Raiders. That's what it, you know, because I sat there, you know, I had my sons watch it too. You know what I mean? They wasn't with me, but I had made sure they watched it too, wherever they were. You know what I mean? And they got them to feel, you know, why I love the Raiders so much. And like Al Davis, he like kindred spirits. It's like, everything he was saying, like, you know, most of the videos I had saw, even the ones I hadn't seen, I was like, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. That's exactly what I would have said. And I always felt like Al Davis and me are kindred spirits. And even like the few times I thought about, you know, turning my back on the Raiders, I couldn't, because Al Davis is like me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll be in situations, I'll ask myself, what would Al Davis do? And I'll do it. And it always works for me. You know what I mean?
There
so I loved
go.
It. You know what I'm saying? I loved it. I just wish it would have showed how petty the NFL actually are and has been to us, the Raider organization, throughout the years. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. You know what I mean? No, hey, Gangster, I understand what you're saying there. Remember, though, it's made by NFL Films, so it's made by the NFL.
Yeah,
number
I know.
One.
So, yeah, we had to.
But number two, I think if you listen to the interview that I did with Ken Rogers, the director, yesterday, he talked about the last 2 years and how, you know, he works for the NFL. So he said that there's been a complete kind of change in the relationship between the league and the franchise. So that's good. So maybe, just maybe, and we got to see over time, I'll take him at his word for right now, is that relationship has reached a new level. The past has kind of been, okay, the past is the past, and we had all that stuff go on, like you said, before and after that. But now with them in Las Vegas, the league needs the Raiders to be successful in Las Vegas to justify the move and all that stuff. So I think the league is going to be much more, should treat the franchise more fairly, so we'll have to see over time. All right, Gangster Raider, thanks, man. All right, we're going out to Raider 27. Raider 27, you're on with Scott and Chris here on Silver and Black today.
Hey, guys, I really enjoyed the special. It was really, really good. I lived through a lot of that. I was a season ticket holder in L.A., and Xavier Hermosa was in our parking lot. We had a private parking lot. He was in there with us, and I wasn't, you know, I would go over and say hi and talk to him almost every game, but he was at almost every game. He's a good dude. So, yeah, it was really good. I loved everything about it. Man, I was ready to get ready to go and play. I was ready to go. I'd get out in the snow and go for it. Hey, can I tell a Raider, Al Davis story real quick?
Of course.
So we went to so many games that I got to know the staff, the ushers and everything. And in the Coliseum, they were pretty much in the same place every day. You weren't allowed to go to a different section than your tickets were, but they got to know me, so they would let me go all the way down, and my seats were on the visitor's side and on the visitor's end of the end zone. So before every game, I would go down and go right down to the goal line, right on the field, you know, just right there, and I'd cuss at the other team. And I'd just sit there and go crazy, and it would just be nuts. And a lot of the players would start laughing and wave at me and stuff. I mean, it was pretty cool. One time we were playing the Chiefs. So, you know, it had to be in high gear for the Chiefs. So I go down there, and Al Davis is like 20 feet away from me talking to Christian Okoye. And I am just going off. I mean, I keep hitting a different gear every time. This whole thing, and Christian was, they were laughing at the players, thought it was kind of funny, I think. But he was having a hard time talking to Al Davis. He kept looking over at me because I'm just going ballistic. I mean, I'm just going off. And so finally Al Davis shook his hand, patted him on the shoulder pad, and Christian Okoye took off. And Al Davis looked right at me and gave me that look and gave me that thumbs up. And I tell you what, I didn't have to walk up any stairs all the way back up to my seat. I just floated all the way up there. It was great.
That's great, man. I appreciate you sharing that that story. That's what's great. Yeah, I love Al Davis stories, especially those of you who met him and had the opportunity to be around him, especially from fans, because he always treated people with respect. He understood how important the fans were and how important it was for his team to win. All right, we'll get one more call in here before we take a break. It is Raider Paul. Raider Paul, you're on with Scott and Chris here on Silver and Black today.
Hey, guys, great show. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I've been a fan for a lot of years, but it's good to see the younger generation, like you said, to realize what he went through. And not only that, the fans, because we didn't know, you know, when I started in Oakland in the 70s, we didn't know we were moving to L.A. So we moved to L.A., and then you get established, which it was a rough part of town, too, back then. And then we would have to move back to Oakland, of course. But I was very lucky because Mr. Davis, when I would go to the games, we stayed at the same hotel, and it was always at the Hilton. As a matter of fact, he lived there for quite a bit of time. Gentleman, all business, but he always took time for his fans, and he always made sure that everybody, you know, got to talk to him a little bit. And Saturday night before, one thing about Mr. Al Davis, he was very, very loyal, because I would get together with Run Run. I don't know if many of you guys remember Run Run, but Run Run was his lifelong friend since the 60s. And he'd run out on the field and grab the football during the games and practices and run them back. And I got some good pictures with me, Tom Flores, Run Run, and Al Davis with all the rings on. They let me put the rings on.
that's awesome,
how
man.
That's how loyal that guy was. So yeah. Great show, guys, and I'm glad the younger generation gets an opportunity to hear all this. Thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, Paul, thank you. Appreciate the call, man. And I love those stories. And you can keep sharing the stories today. And tell me what you think of the film. 702-365-9200 is the number. We're going to step aside for a break here. When we come back on the other side, we're going to switch gears just for a little bit. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl. Oh, yeah, there's a game on Sunday. How many of you are watching it? How many of you refuse to watch it because it's the Bucks and Tom Brady versus Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs? I want to hear that too. But what we're going to do is, of course, we're in Las Vegas, right? So we're going to talk about sports gaming. We usually do on Fridays anyway. But with this game particularly, we're going to bring on David Strauss. He is the head bookmaker at Book It HQ, and they have some just insane prop bets. So we're going to talk about prop bets. We're going to talk about betting on the Super Bowl. Are you guys betting on the Super Bowl? Who do you got? Let me know so I can make some cash too. But we're going to take a break from the conversation around the Al Davis documentary. We'll get back to that after we interview David Strauss on the other side of this break. You're with Chris and Scott here on Silver and Black today, only on Raider Nation Radio.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black today. Here's your host, Scott Culbranson.
Welcome back. Happy Friday. ladies and gentlemen of Raider Nation. Hey, I have some breaking news. And sorry, my bad. We are going to be with David Strauss from mybookie.ag. mybookie.ag. He's coming up in just a few minutes here to talk about prop bets at the Super Bowl. But breaking news in Raider Nation at this hour, great, great news as our good friend Wayne Mabry, the Violator, has officially been selected for the Ford Hall of Fans class of 2021. He's one of three inductees, along with the Cardinals fan Christy Brown and Cleveland Browns fan Ray Prisby, who will join other super fans in the Ford Hall of Fame at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton. So there you go. Silver and black, even in the Fan Hall of Fame, Wayne Mabry has been selected. So he is in. Congratulations to Wayne. I'm trying to get a hold of Wayne. We're trying to get him on here at the top of the next hour to talk about it. I am sure he is just ecstatic and so humbled by it and so happy. He's such a good man, as those of you who know him know that to be true. So we're going to try to get Wayne. But Wayne Mabry, inducted into the Ford Hall of Fans class of 2021. Now we just need to get Tom Flores in, which I 98% sure is going to happen. It's going to be a good year at the Hall of Fame with Charles Woodson and, of course, Coach Flores. And now Wayne Mabry in the fans class, the Ford Hall of Fans class of 21. So really great news. Now what we're going to do is we're going to switch gears and we're going to talk about the Super Bowl, the Chiefs, and of course with the Buccaneers. And we're going to go talk to the guy right now who is the head odds maker at Bookit HQ and my bookie, HG, excuse me. Gosh, I got to get my thing straight there. And that, of course, is David Strauss, who we've had on the show before. David, how you doing today?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing good. It's a little bit of a busy weekend for your folks, I know, with the Super Bowl at mybookie.ag. David, let's talk first about the Super Bowl, you know, the game itself and what's going on. Everybody knows the odds. They know the Chiefs are favorite. But when you look at this game overall and the action you're seeing around it, is it light this year compared to previous years because of the pandemic, or are we right on track with where we usually are in a Super Bowl?
We are a little bit light, just with tickets written and dollar amount, and I do believe it has to be because of the pandemic, especially for a book like us that's globally. I mean, we still have the signups, we still have people playing, but dollar amount and just the action overall, it's probably down. Just like your guys' backyard. I mean, I've talked to people up at MGM and all that, where there's no big Super Bowl parties, and I'm sure the busyness is still going to be there. But at the end of the day, the ticket counts and the dollar amounts won't be there because of what kind of state we're in globally.
Yeah, when we look at the Super Bowl, you know, a lot of folks focus on the game. But if you're someone who is a more frequent sports gambler, that's not really where you're spending your time, right? You're spending your time more in some of these props. I know casual bettors like the props, too, because there's an opportunity there to kind of almost you make more money because you're taking on some really unusual stuff. And we're going to get to some of those examples. But for like the casual bettor, because I know a lot of our listeners are casual bettors. They might be parlay bettors. They might bet a game here or there. For them, when they start to look through what you guys have up on mybookie.ag and they start to look at all of these different prop bets, what's a good strategy if you're new to it and you're looking to maybe just, you know, whet your appetite a little bit?
Well, I would say sit down, take a deep breath, look at your wallet, and then go and proceed. Because sometimes it could be just it's overwhelming for myself when I'm going through all our prop bets. A, realizing I have to grade all these prop bets when I'm watching the game. So that means no adult beverages are going down my throat. But yeah, I just say take a deep breath. And there's something for Super Bowl betting for everybody. The Super Bowl, I mean, you all know, this is not a way to make $1 million. Just one game, you're not going to go away and say, honey, I'm going to put my 2 weeks in after I cash this ticket on Sunday. Just sit back, enjoy, look at some of the fun prop bets, put $10 on the coin toss, and giggle afterwards. If you win, if you lose, you lose. Just enjoy yourself. Maybe don't think about what the world is going on all day Sunday. You can wake up and watch the Puppy Bowl. The Team Fluff is a small favorite right now, -130. You can bet the MVP of the Puppy Bowl. The team male. For MVP is -140, but just relax, enjoy yourself. And like I said, There's no way someone's going to make $1 million and put their 2-week notice in at the end of the day on Sunday.
Yeah, hold on. I got to write down the favorite now in the puppy bowl here so I can go out and make a bet. You know, it's funny. My son actually doesn't watch the Super Bowl. He watches the puppy bowl. So I'll have to give him a little heads up on that. But one of my favorite prop bets has always been the safety in the Super Bowl. And I feel like the last couple of years, maybe because we've had a few safeties in the Super Bowl, that it's lost a little value. So what's one of those plays that maybe happens a lot and something that I might be able to bet where there may be a little bit of value? Because, like I said, I'm kind of getting away from the safety because I feel like it's lost a little bit of value over the last few years.
Well, let's face it, every odds maker and trader, every time there's a safety in a Super Bowl, we just shake our heads and just nod to the people who are cashing their tickets and say, congratulations on that bet, because it's pretty hard to get. Anytime there's a punt return or a kickoff return is another one. I would always say people always bet, and it's always a nice ticket. I just remember when Devin Hester for the Chicago Bears ran it back. And I just remember just saying, oh my God, here comes a lot of tickets that we have to cash, baby, because a lot of people had Devin Hester that one run back when the Bears were in the Super Bowl. But those are two really popular ones. That will there be a punt return, and will there be a kickoff return? And, of course, overtime. Will there be an overtime in a game?
Again, David Strauss, head bookmaker at mybookie.ag, is our guest here on Silver and Black. Today we're talking about Super Bowl. We're talking about prop bets. Now, I look at the stuff you have up on the board, David, and I'm seeing some, you know, kind of usual stuff. I see some stuff around our new president. I love the will Joe Biden mention the Eagles in the interview, and that's because he's from Delaware, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so there's that one, and then will it rain? And then some of the ones I want to talk to you about, because this one I found fascinating as a kid who grew up in San Diego and used to love going down for the Christmas boat parade. You have one up on the board that says, if Tampa wins, will the parade, the Super Bowl parade, the victors parade, be on the water? So when you guys sit down to do this, David, and you come up with these amazing prop bets, and I'm going to get into a couple other ones because you have some really interesting ones. What goes through? Is it just kind of like you guys whiteboard it and come up with some interesting subjects and then you move forward? And does it change every year?
There's about three of us that just sit down and just start looking at social media, looking where the Super Bowl is at, looking at who's playing, who's not playing, what's trending on social media and stuff like that. So we go back and forth, scream at each other, yell at each other. You're crazy putting -140. It should be higher. Very bad names are going across the board. But at the end of the day, we can't shake hands or hug anymore. But we'll fist bump and say, hey, let's try to do 1,500 prop bets next year, because right now we'll probably end up with 1,200.
I like the will they celebrate in the water, because if people were paying attention, the Tampa Bay Lightning, when they won the Stanley Cup, they actually had a little bit of their parade on jet skis in Tampa yes. Bay. So that might be one that people want to pay attention to. One of the other things I like to do is I like to incorporate other sports into prop bets. What's the best way for people to approach that? Because a lot of times you can go like receptions for specific players versus goals in a certain Premier League game or total points in basketball as opposed to yards by a certain player. Like, what's a good way to approach that? Because I feel like that's one where people could have a little fun because they incorporate multiple sports and it forces them to watch multiple games that day.
Well, I think cross-sports prop betting didn't occur that way. It occurred that, okay, everyone, back in the day when we used to go to big Super Bowl parties, there was people that would go there and maybe didn't like the NFL, but were huge hockey fans or huge NBA fans. And so I remember back when we were sitting in our office doing these cross-sports, and I was trying to imagine myself saying, okay, I'm going to the Super Bowl party, and I'm not the biggest fan of the NFL, but I love the Phoenix Suns. So why don't I make this guy watch the Phoenix Suns play the Celtics and bet Chris Paul made free throws in the game versus Tom Brady rushing attempts? So now he's at that Super Bowl party saying, okay, Chris Paul shot 4 free throws. Now I'm just hoping Tom Brady doesn't run around, and he gets to enjoy the game like everyone else. So I think that's why cross sports is probably one of the biggest prop bettors out there, and enjoy it, just because there's something for everyone. There's hockey ones. There's the fourth round of the Phoenix Open prop bet. So I enjoy making those, and I think the bettors really enjoy it as well.
Yeah, again, we're with David Strauss, the head odds maker at mybookie.ag. And some other just really interesting ones. Of course, you got some around Tom Brady retiring, Rob Gronkowski retiring after the season. Will Bruce Arians wear a Kangol hat? Will he wear? Will Andy Reid wear a face shield or a mask? Another good one. Then also, I love this one, David. Will it take longer? The Super Bowl anthem, which is always a big bet, by the way. I have a friend who, that's his big, that's the one he really wants to get on all the time, is the anthem and how long it'll take. But the one you have here, which is great, well, which will be longer, the anthem or the Jake Paul versus Ben Askren fight?
Yeah, I try to put some a little bit more MMA and boxing into some of the prop bets. That's a great one, because that fight is going to happen. I mean, if you follow Ben Askren on social media, he's been working out and training for this fight every day. That fight will happen. And we put how many knockouts will be in UFC Vegas 18 compared to total field goals made in the Super Bowl. That's another good prop bet for all you MMA fans out there.
Yeah, and the other thing is, obviously, with the Super Bowl, people love the commercials, right? That's always one of the big pieces of the big game, is the fact that people get to see a lot of commercials. And even though over the last few years they've disappointed, I found some of your commercial props here really interesting. For example, what will be shown first? What's the first interracial couple shown? White woman, black man, black woman, white man, white man, black man, white woman, black woman. It's really interesting. Chris and I are both in interracial marriages. He's married to a Japanese woman. I'm married to a Hispanic woman. And then the first Anheuser-Busch ad run, the first commercial that will be shown, which is it Pringles? Is it Tide? All these different commercial-based prop. Do you find that a lot of people love putting action on those too?
Yeah, the head-to-head matchup, which commercial will be shown first, is was very popular last year, so that's why we decided to do some this year. Too bad no Budweiser, Pepsi, and Coke. They decided to put their money on how much it would cost to do a Super Bowl commercial to the vaccine and stuff like that. So hats off to those companies. But yeah, people love the commercial ones. We had to take down a couple of them because they were already leaked out. We had one for, yeah, will the M&M characters wear face masks in their first commercial? So we had to take that one down because it was leaked out already.
Yeah, and when you look at the prop bets for the Super Bowl, how much is that growing year after year? And is the influx of legalized gaming here in this country, and I know you guys are a worldwide operation, but is that increasing the amount of people betting? Are you seeing more and more, too, even through your site as well?
Oh, easily, because I was back. I was in your guys' neck of the woods. It's working at Caesar's Palace in the late 90s. And I remember 90% of Super Bowl was side and total. 10% was maybe prop bets. Last year was probably anywhere between 70 to 30. This year we're probably looking at anywhere between prop bets, probably close to 40% of the action is going to be on prop bets and 60 on side and total. Especially this game where it's been almost three and a half for 2 weeks. The total has maybe moved a half a point, give or take. So we're not that much line movement on the Super Bowl. And then we've seen in years past. So, I think prop bets are going to be big, big, big bet this year.
Do you find that more people bet? Like, I don't even look at the spread because, honestly, I don't care. I just look at the prop bets because I have a lot more fun with that. So do you find a lot more people don't even bet the spread or bet the total and they just primarily will bet props?
I've had to come across to a lot of people that way, especially in the NBA. They're just going to play their player prop bets and maybe some game prop bets or live gaming prop bets. So, yeah, the side in total, I hate to say it, I would think maybe in the next 5 to 10 years might be the other way around, where 70% is going on props and 30% is side in total.
Yeah, and Dave, did you see that this year in the NFL, too, that people were going with props much more than that as well?
NFL is still creme of the creme when it comes to the betting aside in total. But we did see an increase in prop betting. College is probably going to be the last one that's going to be less, more prop bets and less side in total. But NFL, I would think right now, they're probably the baseball. I think we're going to see with all these now live gaming and a lot of teams do more prop bets. I would not be shocked if baseball starts. You're going to start seeing a lot of prop bets in baseball.
How much has in-game wagering, because you just mentioned it, so how much has in-game wagering revolutionized sports gaming? Because I know a lot of people I talk to, they love it. So it seems like it's a real positive thing. But how much has it revolutionized the way we gamble?
Oh, it's huge, and we have to say thank you to fantasy sports. I mean, that's the reason why I think inline gaming has just gone through the roof. is because of fantasy sports. So it's always going to be popular, but we're always going to have that those people that just, hey, you know what? I don't have to worry about what so-and-so is doing this game. I just want to put cheer for my team, cheer for my Tampa Bay or Kansas City. I'm just going to bet side or total or Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. So, but yeah, inline gaming is through the roof, and I think it's just only going to go upwards.
Yeah, I love in-game. I'm a big in-game for baseball guy. I'll be sitting on my back patio having a cigar watching a baseball game during the summer, and I'm watching the whole game, so I see the rhythm of what's going on, and I pay attention, and I jump on stuff when it happens. Now, David, talk about mybookie.ag. What do you guys have going for this Sunday? What can people expect if they go to the website?
Yeah, we have a 50% sign-up bonus up to $1,000 right now. We got to, I think, over 1,100 Super Bowl prop bets right now. I think by tomorrow we'll probably be close to 1,200 as I'm still trying to figure out some what's trending. I might do some Trevor Bauer Super Bowl prop bets now, now that he's an L.A. Dodger. So I have to think of some stuff for that one. But, yeah, sign up. Go over to mybookie.ag, sign up today, and join today. Don't forget tonight. Knuckle Mania, Paige VanZant, yes. Her first fight, then bare knuckle fighting, then UFC tomorrow, a billion college basketball games, NHL, hopefully the Golden Knights win tonight. It's just a fantastic weekend of sports betting. Ignore the kids this weekend because you've seen them enough during this pandemic and just watch sports all week.
David Strauss, head odds maker at mybookie.ag. David, as always, a pleasure. Thanks for joining us and have a great Super Bowl weekend.
You too. Enjoy yourself and stay warm out there.
All right, we will. All right, David Strauss, good stuff. 1,200, Chapman, 1,200 prop bets.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, I can remember back in the days, and you know, you and me have both been in this city a long time, where we would go up to the Hilton maybe on a Friday night before the Super Bowl, and they'd always have a big party. Maybe some players would be there, but we'd grab the packet that they would have, and it would be 47 pages of prop bets. And it's like there's people who will literally sit and analyze every single bet that's on there. I mean, it's amazing what they have been able to do, and just kudos to everybody who gets the job done when it comes to those things. Because, I mean, we always joke this is the Super Bowl of NASCAR, or this is the Super Bowl of movies or whatever. This legitimately is the Super Bowl of gaming.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
exactly.
It's incredible.
It's great, but it also, you know, I like I said, I think for folks who are new to it or just dabbling, or you're not a big bettor, you just want to bet, you know, $20 a weekend during the NFL season or whatever. So you're looking, and that's what my advice would be if you're going to do any of this stuff, whether it's on mybookie.ag or at your local sports book or on your app on your phone, like we do here in Nevada and other states where it's legal, it's just set a budget, you know, take $100 and go through that prop list, have fun. I know a lot of people are going to be doing that tonight into Saturday to get their bets in for Sunday, so it'll be a good time, but we wanted to explore that a little bit. Makes the game fun. All right, we're going to step aside for our break. When we come back, we'll get back to your calls. We want to hear what you had to think about Al Davis versus the NFL, the big 30 for 30 documentary that aired last night. So far, I would say that the feedback has been very, very positive, extremely positive, actually. But I'd love to hear if anyone didn't like it, but also those that did like it, and if you learned anything from it that you didn't know before, and also any Al Davis memories you have, please call and share them, 702-365-9200. You're with Chris and Scott here on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.
If you believe Tom Brady did fumble and that Franco Harris didn't catch that pass and call it the Immaculate Deception, then you found the right place. This is Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
All right. Chris, spinning the tunes, man. Good job as always. We're back here, Silver and Black Today, powered by our good friend Sam and Ash, the injury attorneys. Check them out at samandashlaw.com because you deserve what's best. And we are here to talk about the Al Davis documentary last night. What did you guys think? You know, we had some great callers earlier in the show talking about their opinions and their memories of Al Davis, which is great. And it's interesting, Chris, when I talked to Ken Rogers, the director of the film, yesterday on the show from the Raiders facility, when I asked him, you know, could we ever see characters like this in sports again? And his answer emphatically was no, because it has become such a large business and the kind of quote unquote sportsmen no longer exist. And I think he's right, don't you?
Yeah, I do, because when you look at some of the Raiders, the Raider greats, they all had personality, right? Like George Atkinson had personality. Fred Biletnikoff had personality. I mean, Raider legends, Ben Davidson, personality, yeah. The mustache, right? Like, he's notorious for that mustache. You just don't see that in today's NFL. And I mean, yeah, there's guys that have, but not like that. And those guys, they embodied being an outlaw. They embodied being like the old saying in the autumn wind, pillaging just for fun. Those guys went out there and they enjoyed kicking the crap out of people. They enjoyed going out there and smashing heads. They loved that stuff. They lived for it. And now it's like all sports. It's become a business, right? Like, I know that there was bad blood between the Jets and the Raiders back in the 60s and 70s. They hated each other. Those guys wouldn't be caught dead having a beer after a game or hugging. And
right.
It was a completely different era. Now you have guys that have the same agents, or maybe they went to the same college. Maybe they were roommates at the combine. You're just never going to see that again because it's just become too much of a big business.
Yeah. No, that's right. And I just think, too, that in the age of social media, the toxicity around things, too, you know, characters, you can control and your image, you know, because no matter, you know, Al Davis was true to himself. There's no question. But he also knew how to control the brand and the image. And now with so many modes of communications and for fans, I mean, you look at, like we've talked about on this show since we went on the air on August 3rd, when you watch fans and their reactions to things, you can't control it anymore. You used to be able to control it because you would talk to certain reporters and you'd give certain reporters certain stories. Other reporters would not take stories. They were more adversarial, like we talked about with Greg Townsend the other day. And so it's different now. The democratization of communications makes it harder, I think, to develop the characteristics of brands how they used to. Now, consumers sort of help you form your brands. And so I think that too, but also the point he made, and here's a guy who works for the NFL, so he's got no problem with it, which is it's such a more larger, massive business than it was before. The NFL was always big, there's no question. But the money as an inter, because I always say this, the NFL is not just a football league, it is a massive entertainment conglomerate. Okay. And you have 32 teams who are all entertainment companies. Then you have the leagues with an entertainment company. You have NFL Films, which is owned by them. The NFL has its own digital arm, which does digital advertising. It does websites. It does all that kind of stuff. And that has changed everything because there's more centralized control over certain things. And nobody wants to do anything to hurt the money-making machine. And so what Al Davis did in the 80s, can you imagine if somebody tried to do that today? If an owner tried to do what he did in the 80s, it would be very, I mean, it was hard then, right? That's what this whole story was about last night. But to do it today, I think would be impossible.
Yeah, and I think that's what made Al an icon. The fact that he was willing to go at it alone to take on the big bad corporation that was the NFL, right? Like, he didn't care about the shield. It was about what was best for the Raiders, not what was best for the commissioner or what was best for the shield. And the great thing about Al is he didn't tolerate any crap from a lot of guys off the field like you see a lot of owners today. Like Al Davis and Jerry Jones, they're a lot alike in some ways, but they could not be more different as owners when it came to handling off the field business, because you see Jerry Jones a lot of times, he'll turn a blind eye to things. Al Davis, he didn't tolerate any of it. And I think that's what kind of makes him a hero for the common guy, right? Like Al Davis represented the common guy. He wasn't the big, even Mark Davis. He represents the common guy. He's not the billionaire owner who flies around in private jets and has the expensive suits and the alligator shoes. Al Davis, I mean, I remember Al Davis as the guy with the starter jacket on the sidelines, the sunglasses with the chain, right? He wasn't the billionaire owner. He was the common guy. And I really feel like that resonated with a lot of people. And maybe that's what drew a lot of people who weren't from Oakland or Los Angeles to the Raiders. Because I have Raider fans in my family from New Jersey because it was an iconic thing. I mean, it's really such a cool thing to see the way Raider Nation actually is a nation. You hear Patriot Nation or Jet Nation. There's no Jet Nation. There's a Raider Nation. There's no Buccaneer Nation or Panther Nation. There's very few teams that have that national and international appeal. The way, I mean, look, we have a guy who calls in from Australia, right?
Right.
You don't get that with a lot of other fan bases. How many times do we hear you talk about people that you met in London? JT talks about people that he met in London who are Raider fans. Why? Because it's an international brand. And it's, as a guy who loves the NFL and lives in Las Vegas, I could not have been more excited about any team coming here than the Raiders, just because they're an iconic brand. They're not the Jaguars who, okay, so what? They're not the Texans. Oh, great.
No, that's what I always say, Chris, is that there's a lot of great, great fan bases in the NFL. But as far as a nation and as far as a culture goes, that's where the Raiders differ. And Matt, our all-star caller from Hoboken, New Jersey, you talked about New Jersey, Matt from Hoboken, he called yesterday and he said, listen, you know, for anybody who felt like they were an outsider or not part of the in crowd and all that, that's part of the reason he became a Raider fan when he was younger, was because of that. And I think that resonates with people. And for people who don't understand it, they just don't understand it. And Raider Nation doesn't really care if you understand it, because all they know is that they understand one another and they feel the kinship and they feel the family that is the silver and black, which is really, really special. Okay, we're going to take the top of the hour break. On the other side of the break, we'll get back to the phones. We got Ruben on hold and we got some news out of Kansas City. Not good news for the Chiefs. We'll talk about that as we come back. This is Chris and Scott on Silver and Black Today, only on Raider Nation Radio.